राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी
This is a song from Kalyana Kalpaduru, Vibhavari Shesha. It is written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Page 62.
Oh,
बोलो हरि हरि मुकुंद मुरारी राम कृष्ण हय देवा नृसिंह वामन श्रीमदुसूदन राजेन्द्र नंदन श्याम नृसिंह वामन श्रीमधुसूदन राजेन्द्र नंदन श्याम पुदन खादन कैरव साधन जय दशरथि राम पुदन खादन कैरव साधन जय दशरथि राम यशोद दुलाल गोविंद गोपाल वृंदावन पुरंदर यशोद दुलाल गोविंद गोपाल वृंदावन पुरंदर गोबी प्रिया जन राधिका रामन भुवन सुंदर बारा गोबी प्रिया जन राधिका रामन भुवन सुंदर बारा रावणंदाकर मखन ताकर गोपी जन वस्त्रहारी रावणंदाकर मखन ताकर गोपी जन वस्त्रहारी ब्रजेर राघाल गोभ वृंदावाल चित्तहारी वंशिहारी ब्रजेर राघाल गोभ वृंदावाल चित्तहारी वंशिहारी गोविंद वंदन श्रीनंद नंदन ब्रज जन भयहारी गोविंद वंदन श्रीनंद नंदन ब्रज जन भयहारी Thank you.
ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददातिं स्वपदाम्बिकं. वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदं सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च. हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगल्पदे गोपेश गोपिकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते. तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये. वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधार श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवतां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतं अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीं. नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायदवत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीपां प्रपन्नपारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमां. सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत्. वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानुरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं. भीष्मद्रोणतटा जयद्रथजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामाभिकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोत्तीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तक केशवाम् पाराशर्यवचस्सरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानगकेसरं हरिकथा सम्बोधनाभोदितं लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः पेपीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजकलिमलप्रध्वं सिनश्रेयसे. मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्कुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्. य ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दि दिव्यैस्तवै वेदैः साङ्गपदैः क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानामस्थितद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुस्वरासुरगणै देवाय तस्मै नमः. ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः. श्रीमति राधिकाय नमः. सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द. सो वि आर् कण्टिन्यूयिङ्ग् अवर् डिस्कशन् भगवद्गीता एण्ड् देर् आर् सो मेनि थिङ्ग्स् इन् भगवद्गीता इफ् वन् कण्टिन्यू टु डिस्कस् इट् इट् केन् गो फोर् मेनि मेनि मन्त्स् एण्ड् Krishna has spoken to Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, just as you see in that picture, that the mind, the intelligence, the senses are the horses, the mind is the rein, and Krishna, who is situated in the, who is situated as controlling the chariot, is actually the intelligence. And behind that is the passenger, the soul within the chariot, which is the body. So as long as you have this picture in your mind, you will see a lot of things what Krishna has spoken makes a lot of sense. It's easier to understand what Krishna is trying to say. But in spite of that, although Krishna spoke a lot of things in the first few chapters, particularly from second chapter onwards, third, fourth, and fifth chapter, Krishna more or less covered the Karma Yoga, the system of knowledge of karma. But although Krishna spoke all that, Arjuna had a lot of difficulty in understanding it, particularly the first few chapters. The reason for that is that we also get confused when we read the first few chapters, basically because the way Krishna has spoken, strictly speaking, Krishna's position is like this, that as soon as a living entity accepts a material body, he has two options with him. And we are all controlled by these two things. What is that? One is jnanam and another one is karma. First, one acquires the knowledge and that is jnanam. And based on that knowledge, one acts in this world. That's karma. So these two things go side by side. They cannot be separated any time. Because if you separate them out, it won't make any sense. Through jnanam, one is able to act, which is karma. And without jnanam, if you act, it could be probably madness. It won't make any sense at all. So this is the reason why in the second chapter, when Krishna spoke to Arjuna, first the contents of the Gita in the summarized form, he spoke to Arjuna. He spoke two things. First thing, he spoke about the Sangyam, which is the Jnana Yogam part of it. And then he spoke about the Yogam, which is the Karmam side of it. And if you see the second chapter, if you study very seriously, you will notice Krishna has tried to explain to Arjuna these two things side by side. But Arjuna could not understand that. Arjuna was thinking that why these two things have been put to me, whereas I am mostly concerned about what I should do now. This was Arjuna's mind, just like most of our mind also work in the same way, isn't it? We don't want too many options. We want one to be told what is to be done. So same thing has happened to Arjuna. That is why, if you look at the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the introduction of the fifth chapter, Prabhupada has summarized that in a way to make it a little bit more clearer to us what has happened till the five chapters. Up to the end of fifth chapter, Arjuna was in great confusion about what Krishna has spoken. So if you look at that fifth chapter, the first verse itself, Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna says to Krishna, Sanyasam karmanam Krishna punar yogam ja shamshasi yakshayam edayo regam tanme bruhi sunischidam. There again Arjuna's confusion is coming out. So in that purport, if you look at it, you will see how this confusion has been built up. And I'm sure this confusion is everyone's mind. It is not only Arjuna had this confusion, not that we are all very clear in our head. We are not either, because of the way Krishna has spoken, and that is what is little bit difficult sometimes for us to grasp. There Krishna says that, we'll talk about the second chapter, in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. Devotional service is easier than the later, because being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. That we all know, that when Krishna consciousness is executed without expecting anything in return or desiring any results from that, that will free oneself from the bondage. But now Prabhupada is summarizing from second chapter onwards up to the end of fifth chapter. Let us look at that and let's see if we can understand from that. Actually, this is a very difficult part. Unless you very seriously meditate on this and think about it, the clarity of the points that is discussed here is difficult to get into the mind. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. That we know. In the second chapter, Krishna has spoken about that, particularly about the, in one verse, Krishna says there, that is verse 39. In the second chapter, if you look, you will find, Krishna says to Arjuna, Eshate abhida sanghe buddhir yoge to imam shrunu buddha yukto yaya partha karma bandham prahasyasi. In that verse, Krishna is saying, in the translation you can read, Thus far I have declared to you the analytical knowledge of Sankhya philosophy. Now listen to the knowledge of yoga, whereby one works without fruitive result. When you act by such intelligence, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. So Krishna has put these two points before Arjuna. One, he spoke to him very strongly in the first beginning of the second chapter about the identity of the soul, because spiritual life begins with that understanding that we are not the body, we are spirit soul. And if one is not situated in that understanding, one cannot progress in spiritual path. It is a known thing. And throughout Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, this is the background of everything, the beginning of the second chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. That Krishna is repeatedly stressing this point to us, that be always situated on the spiritual platform, identifying with the soul, not with the body. And as long as you are situated in that position, you can understand the rest, what's coming from there afterwards. So in order to get that mind fixed up in that position, Krishna spoke about the soul very strongly, about the importance to identify with the soul rather than with the body. That Krishna has done. After that, Krishna, what did Krishna do? Krishna spoke to Arjuna that now I'll tell you how to act in such a way that you don't have to get entangled in this karma bandhanam. Karma bandhanam means bondage. Bondage means that one is stuck in this material world. How to act in such a way that one can free oneself from this bondage. So two things Krishna has put forward in the second chapter. That's what Prabhupada said here. How to get out of this material entanglement by buddhi yoga or devotional services also explained therein. In the third chapter it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. So when the second chapter was over and when the third chapter began, if you look in the third chapter, immediately Arjuna says to Krishna, Vyamishraneva Vakena, why you are confusing me with all this mixing up things like this? Krishna didn't say one word that I'm not confusing you. He didn't say anything like that. He said, because Arjuna's mind is not clicking to what Krishna was saying. He says, Vyamishraneva Vakena, why you have mixed up everything like this on the one hand, and then buddhi mohayasivami tad egam vada nishchitya yena shrayoham apniyam. My intelligence is bewildered, Arjuna says, by your equivocal instructions. Because Arjuna is asking Krishna, why you have given stress to both knowledge and work? This is confusing me. Arjuna says to Krishna, because therefore please tell me decisively what is most beneficial for me. So Arjuna's doubt was that there is some confusion here, he thinks. That Krishna has spoken to me about knowledge, Krishna has spoken to me about action also to work. So why are you confusing me? Vyamishraneva Vakena, Arjuna says. So Prabhupada writes here that in the third chapter it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. This is very important. If we understand that if one is properly situated in the spiritual knowledge, then he has no more material commitments to this world. He still acts in this world, but not the way like an ordinary person acts in this world. That is where Karma Yoga comes in. It is a difficult thing to understand this principle of Karma Yoga, because Karma Yoga is like this. There are so many ways, only through examples we can get this understanding. Just like if you have a baby, say 1.5 year old, has just started about getting up and want to start walking. So what do we do? In the beginning, when the baby gets up, we know he's going to fall. The baby is going to fall. So what do we do? From both sides we keep supporting him, isn't it? And or hold both the hands and start watching him. And he takes extreme care so he doesn't fall. One step at a time, he keeps moving. And this goes on for some time, a few days or few weeks. After that, he gets that balance right, isn't it? He's able to walk on his own. Karma Yoga is like this. In the beginning, one has to learn this process of executing that karma in a way, such a way, that it does not, his mind is attached to Krishna, still able to execute the karma in this world. That is a bit difficult in the beginning. It's just like the baby is walking. There's always a chance to fall, isn't it? Any second he can collapse and fall down. So you'll have to wake him up again, bring him up again, and start helping him to walk again. Karma Yoga is exactly like that. So he keeps walking. But after some time, what happens? You don't have to tell him anything. He doesn't think anymore, oh, I have to get up and do this or that. He just starts walking, and then automatically it happens to him. Isn't it? The baby starts walking after 2 years or so. Then he is running everywhere, walking away. He doesn't think anymore that I have to do this as an activity. This is exactly like that, this Karma Yoga. When one comes to that position of Krishna consciousness, when one has linked himself with Krishna in his life, completely identified with Krishna's work, and then there is no more thinking about material activities or spiritual activities. These two things doesn't exist after that. And the best examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the gopis and Shabari in Ramayana. Two best examples. Gopis, what did they do? Did they go to Mangalarati every morning? Did they chant 16 rounds every day? No, they didn't do anything. They just lived their life normally. Only thing was that they got attached to Krishna. When they got attached to Krishna, the style of activity completely changed in their life. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can see this change happening in the gopi's life. Sudeva Goswami talks about this to Parikshit Maharaj. And this Karma Yoga, how this has developed into bhakti in due course in the gopi's heart, is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam much better than anywhere else. That is why gopis are considered to be the best example. Why? Because if you know the person who is prompting you to act in this world, and if your connection with that person is closer, and then all your activities become spiritual. This is where our problem is. Our problem is, we are acting on the platform of false ego, isn't it? Our false ego is moving, making us to do certain things to our interest. But when that our interest goes away, and false ego goes away, and when everything is performed simply to Krishna's satisfaction, and there is no separate life, my life and Krishna's pleasing Krishna, they are not two different things. All the body, everything, mind, senses, intelligence, everything is in Krishna's service. When that happens, that becomes yoga. That becomes yoga. Otherwise, it is not yoga. For example, most of our cases now, let's take for example, many of us, we think that, oh, so many hours in a day or sometime in the afternoon on Sunday, I leave it for Krishna. Rest of the time, it's my personal life. I keep to myself. I don't have to be anyone else involved in that. It's my life. So there is my life and there is service to Krishna, two separate things. The service to Krishna and my life shouldn't exist for a very long time. One day, they have to merge and it has to be only service to Krishna. That is spiritual life. That is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, as long as we keep separate Krishna separate from our life and we lead our life separately from Krishna, that Karma Yoga, the purification won't happen inside. This is the reason why Krishna has... What did the gopis do? In the beginning, gopis also had no... They had no knowledge of any of these things. They had no knowledge of any of these things. What is spoken in Karma Yoga, or Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, nothing was known to them. Somehow or the other, they got attracted to Krishna. The result was that attraction became stronger day by day. And what was happening after that? Ya dohani avahanani madanobhalega prankhenghanabhi arvido akshanam arjanadom gayandi chainam anurakta dhiyaha ashrugandhyaha dhanya vrajastriya urukrama chittayanaha. Srimad Bhagavatam, Srisudha Goswami, Sudeva Goswami talks about the gopis like this. In the beginning, they had different ideas. But when Krishna has come to their life, and they realized in their life that simply getting attached to Krishna was they became their sole objective in life. In a natural way it happened to them. Why? Due to association with Krishna. That we'll see in the Ekadasha Skandham later, how association with Krishna brings these two things together. Gopis were fortunate that they got that opportunity to associate with Krishna directly. Associating Krishna means it is just like sajjanam. That means association with the devotee. In other words, that purification happened to them in a normal way. The result was that all their activities became simply a purification. Throughout their work, they were doing everything at home. They were cleaning the house, and they were sweeping the floor, they were grinding the flour, they were milking the cows, they were feeding the babies, they were looking after the old people. So many things they were doing. Ya dohane avahanane madhano baleva prangin kanabi aridido arjanam arjanadom gayandi chainam anurakta diyaha ashrugandhyaha. that when they were doing all these different activities, they were able to sing about Krishna. Why? The mind got attracted to Krishna by now. Gayandi jainam anurakta dhiyaha ashrukandhyaha. Then dhanya vrajastriya urukrama chitayanam. That how fortunate are they about the gopis. Who is speaking? This is, I think, the ladies in Mathura. When Krishna went to Mathura, the women who were in the palace in Mathura, they were talking about gopis in Vrindavanam. How fortunate they are that they got attracted to Krishna like this, and their whole life became activities for pleasing Krishna. So in their daily life, they had no a second life for them. A personal life didn't exist for them. There was only one life, and that life was completely in Krishna consciousness. Everything they did, with all the time, they just wanted to please Krishna. How to please Krishna? That became the whole purpose in life. Everything else was left behind. So, gopis are the best example in that way in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And similarly in Ramayanam, you will find Shabari also did exactly the same thing. Shabari at one point, before she saw Ramachandra, the sages told her that one day Ramachandra is going to come. As soon as this thought has gone into to Shabari's head, Shabari has never thought about anything else after that. When will Ramachandra come? This was the thought in Shabari's mind. So from then, all the activities what she has done was simply to please Ramachandra. And there was nothing in her mind separated from that. So this is the way that Karma Yoga comes to people. The beginning of the Karma Yoga is like that. That all activities become completely Krishna conscious or become a devotional service to Krishna. So when these things happen, when these things are explained theoretically, sometimes it's very difficult for most of the people to understand it. That is why here in the third chapter, Krishna explained that Karma Yoga a little bit more in detail to Arjuna. So that although Arjuna could have understood everything easily, but deliberately Krishna was doing this with Arjuna because he knew that in future, people who come to read Bhagavad Gita, they will have a lot of questions. And in order to keep them all and keep them understand the significance of karma, karmam and jnanam, as I mentioned before, they are the two most important things, jnanam and karmam. And right from the creation, if you look, when the whole creation process started, how did the creation process start? Creation process started like this, that through Prajapatis, the process of karmam was given, karma yoga was executed through the process of Prajapatis. Daksha Prajapati and others, they were all stalwarts in performing the yagas, sacrifices. And through the four Kumaras, Sanaga, Sananda, Sanadana and Sanat Kumara, through them, the Jnanamargam process was executed. So karma and Jnanam existed from the very beginning. From the very beginning, both of them existed. And that is why Krishna is also saying here, that this process will exist all the time. And every living entity has to accept that. You cannot reject any of them. So both of them are important. Jnanam is important, karma is also important. So here what happened is that in the third chapter, Krishna explained, he says here, that it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. There is no more duties to perform. That's what it meant. That he, all his activities are yogam then. That is no more duty. Duty we perform out of our responsibility, feeling of responsibility. I have this family to look after, I have this society to care for, or duties, commitment to the nation and this, that and the other. These are all duties. But for a person who has come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, these duties goes away. They are not duties anymore. They are yoga for him. That is what was explained in Krishna. Took a lot of effort in the third chapter to explain the science of Karma Yoga to Arjuna. To make that clarity in him. That when one executes Karma Yoga, what his consciousness will be. How he will act in this world. These things were explained in the third chapter. But then in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of such sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. But if you look at the fourth chapter, at the end of in the beginning of fourth chapter, you will see again Krishna has explained certain things to Arjuna. That is the chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge. Krishna says there that Shri Bhagavan Uvajam Imam Vivasvade Yogam Proktavanaham Vyayam Vaivasvan Manave Praha Manurikshaguve Bravil. So Krishna brings back the history now, starting from Vivasvan and Manu onwards. So from there, how this knowledge survived in this world. And they all followed this tradition very strictly, and that is how it got survived in this world. So Krishna says in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously, so throughout fourth chapter, Krishna spoke about the knowledge, again transcendental knowledge. By the end, he asked Arjuna to take up the bow and arrow and start fighting. That when he said that, Arjuna got confused again. He says here like this, therefore by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. You see, Arjuna got again confused. Why Krishna is talking about knowledge still? This is Arjuna's question. So that's why in the fourth chapter was titled as Jnanam Karma Sannyasa Yogam. That means Jnanam and Karma is not the goal at the end. Krishna is the goal. That one should not forget. These are the path through which one get there. Jnanam is one path, Karma is another path. But their importance Krishna has stressed in all times. So when Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yogam was spoken, Arjuna's understanding was like this. Arjuna thought, if I take the process of jnanam, knowledge, I have to give up all my karma. Why should I act then? But on the other hand, Krishna is also talking about karma again. So this is confusing me. And Arjuna put that forward in the fifth chapter again to Krishna. So that's why you find there. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna, understanding that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stop? What Arjuna did not understand was, Arjuna was thinking that if I follow this route of karma sannyasam means giving up all karma and developing knowledge, spiritual knowledge, that is called jnananishtha. All the great sages are situated like that. That is called as jnananishtha. Jnananishtha and karmanishtha. There are two things. Fixed up in the jnanam and fixed up in karma. They are called jnananishtha and karmanishtha. So Arjuna's mind immediately went in the way the sages acted. He started thinking that if I give up all these things, why, if I don't have to do any work and I develop knowledge, why are Krishna is asking me to fight again? This was Arjuna's doubt. So he brought this doubt again in this fifth chapter in the beginning. There you can see there, sannyasam karmanam Krishna punar yogam cha shamshasi. Krishna, you talk to me about sannyasam, and why are you talking to me about yogam again? He says, yak shreyam edayor egam tanme bruhi sunishchitam. Out of these two, tell me what is the right thing to do. We need the translation. Arjuna says, oh Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now, will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? So, it is the same situation with Arjuna. I will give you an example. Maybe you can, if you follow this example and you think it over when you get home, probably you may get this right in your mind. Once it so happened that a very big company, big business group who manufacture soap powder, they wanted to test the market. So they thought probably we will do that in the Middle East, in the Gulf, where they wanted to test this soap, new soap powder they were introducing into the market. So they made a huge advertisement campaign before they brought the product into the market. And they hired a very famous personality, some Miss World or Miss Universe or whatever that was, somebody they hired. And what they do was, they took photographs of this Miss World washing clothes with the soap powder, as they do always, they want to make the advertisement. So first there is one bucket in that all the dirty clothes were there. Then there was another bucket where this soap powder was mixed up with the hot water and kept there. And then this Miss World comes, take this dirty clothes from the dirty bucket, dips it into the soap powder, and takes it into a third bucket, which is the water, clean water. She dips in there and then hands it up like this to show how clean the clothes are after washing in that soap powder, isn't it? I mean, simple. So three pictures they show how she washed the clothes with this new soap powder. which they are marketing, and she hung it up, the fresh new clothes on the side to show how clean the, how good the soap powder was. So this advertisement went on for a long time, and the soap powder was brought into the market. When the soap powder was brought into the market, they expected a booming sale for this, because they spent a lot of money on advertisement. They expected some results from that. Not one packet was sold after that. So they started inquiring about it. Why this has happened like this? The reason for that was, in Gulf, in the Arab countries, they read from right to left, isn't it? So what they understood was, if you take a clean cloth and dip it in the soap powder, and if you take it out, it will be like this. When they saw this, this is what is their marketing intelligence, or whatever they call it. This has brought this back to them, this feedback, that where things have gone wrong. Our Arjuna got into the same mess here. Arjuna was given some understanding from the very beginning. Krishna was talking to him about jnanam and karmam, very important points. Arjuna was thinking, I will choose from that, what I want. Eventually choosing everything, he left behind everything, and at the end he is saying, I am not left with anything. It's all confusion from beginning to end for Arjuna. Arjuna is like this soap advertisement going backwards from the fifth chapter towards the beginning. So this kind of problem is always there, particularly in relationship with Bhagavad Gita. When you read Bhagavad Gita, you have to always remember on what background Krishna is speaking these things. As I mentioned before, that picture is a very clear understanding of the background of Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, we will get confused. We will start thinking that this is confusing, that's confusing. I'm sure still there are many, many people, when they read through Bhagavad Gita, they get different understanding from that. And that is why we have so many commentaries also from Bhagavad Gita. Some persons who understood karma as important, they are given all the stress on karma. Some people who thought jnanam as important, they give the stress on jnanam. Actually, karmam, jnanam, bhakti, they are all three processes are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. But what has happened is that sometimes people's mind, who is gone too far in the direction of karmam, they get attracted to karmam and accept that as the all in all. But Bhagavad Gita is saying one thing to us. At the end, if we do not accept, take Krishna's shelter, whatever knowledge what we have accumulated in this world, or whatever great deeds you have performed in this world, ultimately they will not save you from the cycle of birth and death. What will take one person out of the cycle of birth and death is Krishna consciousness and surrendering to Krishna. And that surrendering process, actually jnanam and karmam you can't reject. They are also part of the process. It's not that if I take the jnanam, process of jnanam, I reject karmam and bhakti. No. Even when coming to bhakti yogam also, jnanam and karmam also has a very important role to play there. So therefore, always we have to take Bhagavad Gita in total, not in piecemeal. From here and there, one verse here and one verse there, no. It's always we have to see Bhagavad Gita together. It was spoken like this. Krishna didn't speak Bhagavad Gita in chapter by chapter. He spoke as a whole package he was given to Arjuna. Vedavyasa Maharshi, for our benefit, has broken down this into different patterns and presented to us. So in 18 chapters, and there through these commentaries and with the help of the great devotees and acharyas, we are able to understand the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. So here you will see that Arjuna, understanding that renunciation knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyasam or renunciation of knowledge should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. This is the problem. Arjuna was thinking that how can one renounce everything and how can one work also? This is not compatible. This is what Arjuna's mind was. But it was only in Krishna's philosophy it is different. Krishna says sannyasam doesn't mean that you stay in one place quietly, not doing anything about it. Sannyasam means you work for Krishna more than any other time. You preach glories of Krishna and you make people Krishna conscious and distribute the Krishna's knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to others. That is the duty of a sannyasi. So Krishna wanted to get this point across to him, that at no point Krishna says anyone to stop working. Work has to go on. Krishna says, I also do my work in this world. What I have to do when I come here? Because if I stop working, Krishna says, everybody else will stop. And when everyone else stops, then the whole thing will be in a mess. So work has to continue. But how to do that work with proper knowledge, that is more important. And that is what Krishna has tried to explain in these five chapters to Arjuna. So this is a very important thing. There are so many things in the Bhagavad Gita which, if we understand and think about it, you will get a clearer picture of what Krishna was trying to explain, and then our activities will also be purified. Otherwise, simply working without proper understanding of karma, proper understanding of the knowledge, simply working for sense gratification, means it will eventually bind us to the material world. These are discussed between, in the Bhagavatam also you can see this, how these things comes into effect. One thing is this, that unless we think about all these things deeply and we start hearing about it and analyzing our own mind, there will not be any effect on us. Otherwise we will carry on doing what we are doing without proper understanding of it. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when creations happened, you can see, I think this is in the second canto, when originally the creation was discussed, Lord Brahma and Sri Narada Maharshi spoke to each other about the creation, isn't it? Occasion, Lord Brahma spoke to Sri Narada Maharshi. So at that time, Lord Brahma said to Narada Maharshi that, please do not misunderstand that I am the creator. This is the first thing what happens to all of us. You see, the sense, the knowledge, the senses are very deceiving. The intelligence is deceiving, the mind is deceiving. That is why the knowledge of the Shastram is so important. Otherwise, all our conclusions are wrong. Because when you go through the Shastram and start seeing things through the eyes of the Shastram, you can appreciate that the knowledge is perfect. Because that is where your mind gets cleared up. Because the knowledge what you acquire through research work, knowledge you acquire through the speculation, is never correct. It's never correct. Because this clarity of thought, what the sages had, which they have acquired through thousands of years of penances and austerities, that knowledge we will never get through our mental speculation. It is not possible. Nor through by research work. It's not possible. Let's go through that one by one and see how it happens. I can explain to you the process of creation, how it is explained in the Bhagavatam by Lord Brahma to Sri Narada Maharshi, and just see how our modern concept of creation and our modern concept of understanding of life is so different from that. And you can in your own mind make the judgment about it. So, when Brahma was saying to Sri Narada Maharshi that, first of all, come out of this illusion that I created it. I didn't create it. Just like he gave the example that in the morning when you wake up, say it is all dark. It's all dark and there is no sunlight at all. So when you look outside, you can't see anything. You can't see anything. And does that mean that what really exists does not exist because I can't see it? Does it mean like that? No, it doesn't mean like that. As soon as the sun comes out, everything manifests in front of us. We can see everything. We can perceive through our eyes all that has been created, at least whatever the senses are capable of seeing. Now, the sun did not create anything. The sun has only given the power to the eye to see things. That's all the sun has done. The creation was already there. Everything that was created, it exists all the time. But this perception of that does exist came to us with the help of the sunlight. Isn't it? That the perception or the knowledge that has come to me that these things do exist is only with the help of the sunlight. Similarly, the spirit soul within us is acting in that role. Spirit soul within us is acting in that role. The light is there. The objects are there. The eye is there. But still, who is actually perceiving this? It is the soul inside, knowing that this thing does exist. If the soul does not give the capacity for the mind to perceive this, You will never understand that such a thing exists, because the senses on its own are not capable of developing that knowledge from the object. Nor the mind is capable of doing that, nor the light is capable of doing that. That means you have the sunlight, you have the mind, and you have the senses, and you have the sense objects, isn't it? In order to perceive the sense objects, all the three may be present, which means the light is present, the senses, the eye is working, and also the mind is working. Then normally the eye comes into contact with the sense object, the object, and sends a signal to the mind, and mind experiences that. Sankalpam and vikalpam happens in the mind, and mind transmits the message to intelligence, and the opinion is formed about the particular object, and likewise it goes on, that process. All these things may happen, so long as the soul inside the body gives that ability to do that function to the mind, intelligence and the senses. Otherwise it cannot function. On their own, they are helpless. They cannot function. They have no capacity to do anything. From this all you can conclude, all of this, you can conclude that the important personality, the important entity in all these things is the soul within the body. And so long as we are not following or inquiring about the soul, all your so-called research work based on mind, intelligence and senses is not going to reach the final destination. And that is what that photograph is saying there. Arjuna, the passenger in the chariot, who is the soul, he experiences everything, the mind, senses and everything, and it goes in the right direction as long as Krishna is driving that intelligence. Krishna is driving the intelligence. Otherwise, these five horses will drive in five different directions and they will topple over and finish, the chariot is finished. That means our material body is finished at the end. So, coming back to this creation again, Sri Narada Maharshi asked the Lord Brahma that to discuss with him in detail about this creation. So, a few things he spoke at the beginning. First thing, Narada Brahma talks about the process of creation. In the process of creation, we can also put this into perspective. You can see yourself what happens. When we all came to this world, we came as little babies and we grew up from there. We grew up from then onwards, we grew further, became young boys or young girls over a 5 years or 6 years time. And then we grew up further, became young men or young women. And then you grow further, older people, old men, old women. Like this it goes, day after day after day, change is happening. So what is that thing that is changing us all the time? This is the question. Brahma was explaining this to Sri Narada Maharshi. What is that thing that is changing you all the time? Why should it change like this? This is the question, isn't it? Why are we changing our identity like this all the time? And this one particular entity is one what Krishna has created in the beginning, which is known as Kalam. Kalam means the time factor. Dravyam karmascha kalascha swabhavo jiva evaja. That how this thing called time factor influences, that we have to look into ourselves, our own body. After we were born, for the first 5 years, parents showed a lot of affection to the child. And he is running around and he is growing all the time. He's doing a lot of things. Everyone is still tolerating his all the nonsense what he's doing. But still, people enjoy that childhood of the children's life. And then that is known as Balyam, Balyakalam, or the time that the as a little boy, how he plays. From 5 to 10, he becomes a little bit more responsible. It is known as Kaumaram, Kaumaram age. At that age, he is a little bit more sensible. Sensible in the sense, he still does a lot of nonsense. But at the same time, he has got some idea of what he is doing. And still, at that time, parents did not chastise him anymore. He is in his process of changing. He is constantly changing. All the time he is changing, isn't it? He is changing, changing, changing. And then what happens? He gets to his youthful age. Say, for example, 20, 25. By now, he has become much more matured in his thinking. All his ideas and conceptions of life has changed. Now, he has spent some time at the school or college and acquired some qualifications and with the result of that, now he wants to invest that in something and make some money out of it. So all these ideas are developing. By now, all the childhood activities have been completely left behind. So the whole activities and the frame of mind is different at this time. So what was that was changing him throughout this period? It is what is known as kalam. Kalam is what is doing this. In other words, the duty of kalam is nothing but to transform us every day from one to another, one to another. We keep on changing. And this changing effect on us is caused by what is known as kalam. Dravyam karmascha kalascha svabhavo jiva yamaja. Kalam is what it does that to us. So eventually what happens? We become young men, young women, and then they want to, for all the qualifications and everything what they have obtained or achieved in life, they want to have some status in the society. So he works hard, earns money, acquires wealth, and then in that process, then he wants to have some happiness in life. He gets married, he or she. After getting married, then they have children. So the family expands. Like this, he has changed his life, and eventually he becomes old, hold on to a stick, and struggles to walk in this world. By now, he has gone through the whole phase. That youthfulness has gone, and has come to the old age. And then what happens? One day he leaves the body and goes away. So what happens then? Then somebody says sometime later, there was someone like this by name lived here in this world some years ago. He's all dead and gone. That's what they will say, isn't it? There's no more, it's forgotten easily. It's easily forgotten. No matter who it is, it's all forgotten at the end. So something that has been changing you from beginning to end, when you came as a baby to this world, and the first few years, happy life at home with the parents, all the relatives looking at you, hugging you, kissing you, and giving you all kinds of happiness and making you feel the center of attraction. Gone through a whole life where you have struggled through to make money and bring up the children, all through that process you went through. And eventually you had to leave this body also. And in the old age you are reflecting on the past life, what all has happened, what was the meaning of all these things. You start thinking about it, isn't it? That is, Ajari Swamiji says about that very nicely. He says that, Balastaval Krida Asakta. When you are a child, all you are interested is in playing and playing alone, nothing else. You don't want to know anything else what goes on in this world. And Tarunastaval Taruni Saktaham. When you are in the youthful age, all you want is to associate with the opposite sex. Whether it's a man to the woman or woman to the man. Vruddhastaval Chinda Asaktaham. When you are old, that taste is also gone. And then reflecting back on life, what have I done in my life, all through the younger days where I spent at home, how parents looked after us, and also all the other pleasures, happiness and distress, what has come. Vruddhastaval Chinda Asaktaha. Chinda Sakta or Chinda Madhada, as it is called. This is the nature of the old age. Old age means simply sitting and thinking, endless thinking, it is. What shall I do now? What shall I do now? Because day by day, body is failing. And there is no much goal after that in life. What else to do? So, virtually, we are becoming made redundant in the body and the mind everywhere. So, one after the other, the society also, as soon as they see the old person, oh, it's just a hassle. Keep away from him. So, this is what you get in this world. So, at that time, you start remembering more. Oh, one time, you have also done the same thing to somebody else. You also rejected people in the same way. Now somebody else is rejecting you, so there's nothing to lament about it. It is just that cycle is continuing like this. Where does this come from? This is the duty of kalam. Kalam does it. So how powerful kalam is, you can see. Krishna also says about this in the Bhagavad Gita, about kalam is spoken. So this kalam is that entity which keeps changing you all the time. Then the next entity is called karmam. What does karmam do? Karmam does like this. What does karma mean? Karmam is something which you can only by observation you can understand. How does karmam works in this world? In this way, if you look at this world, two people are working. Identical work they are doing. But when they get the results, it's totally different. Two people are getting two different results. I'm not talking about the job and the salary now.
That's a completely different issue. I'm talking about their experiences in life is different for two people. The experience of A is not the experience of B, is it? Or experience of B is not the experience of C. So, one person to another, constantly the results that he gets from his activities in this world is different. Somebody is a doctor and somebody is a patient. Somebody is a very wealthy person and somebody is a very poor person. Somebody is very beautiful and somebody is very ugly. And somebody is very strong and he is able to do many things. Somebody is very, very weak at mind and in his physically also. So like this, so many different diverse experiences are coming to each and every one of us in this world. Why does this happen? The logic and the answers points out to only one thing, and Krishna also says the same thing, that it is this factor called karma that is bringing these results to us all the time. In so many different lifetimes, so many different activities we have performed, all those activities have been stored up. That we'll come to that, where the storage is and how the stored product is keep coming to us every time when it is needed. So karma is that factor which is constantly controlling our life in this world. We are always thinking that I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing. We are not doing anything. Actually, strictly speaking, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahangara vimudhalpa kartaham iti manyade. I have got this perception that I'm doing this, but actually, strictly speaking, there is a number of factors behind me which is pushing me to act in one direction or the other. So here the karma is one of the most powerful factor that is behind it. And what does this karma does? As much as one is engaging in karma, from that what is known as swabhavam develops. Swabhavam develops. Swabhavam is the result of this karma. It's like, for example, one engages in spiritual activities. His swabhavam or nature will be such that he will be situated in spiritual consciousness. Because of the kind of work he execute, in the kind of karma he execute in such a way, that karma will purify him and develops a lot of satugunam in that person. So naturally, when the satugunam builds up in that person, his swabhavam or nature also will be such that he will automatically engage in such karma, which is related to Krishna consciousness. Similarly, when one engages in rajasic activities or in the mood of passion, that kind of activity will build up that kind of nature or swabhavam in that person, and that swabhavam in turn will bring forth the similar karma from that person, and in that way that cycle will continue. So these three things, kalam, karmam and swabhavam, Brahma is talking to Srinarada Maharshi about it. So these three things are important, kalam, karmam and swabhavam. They are spoken in the Bhagavatam in the beginning. Now, what else? There are two more other important things which is controlling our life in this world. The first one is called Mahatattva. Mahatattva means that so many lifetimes, billions and billions of living entities have come to this world. And they are coming, taking birth, living some time, and then dying and going away. Taking birth again, living some time, dying, going away. This cycle is going on every individual soul, isn't it? All of us are subjected to this process. Only thing is, because we are not aware of that, we in our tiny little world, we sit here and think that this is everything. That is our ignorance, but that we can't help. Krishna is saying that I can't help you on that. If you don't accept Bhagavad Gita, then what can you do? So Krishna is stressing these points to us so that we understand what we are. So the point is, all these living entities, billions and billions of jivas, who are operating in this material atmosphere, accepting and rejecting bodies all the time, maintaining a small amount of time or a short amount of time, depending on the karma what is called. The sum total of all this karma is kept in one storehouse, and that is known as Mahatattva. Mahatattva is that storehouse where everything is stored. Everything is stored. It is from this Mahatattva that every living entity is linked to that through a system. And that connection with the Mahatattva for the living entity is like this.
that if you look at your body, you will see there is a thing called chittam. Chittam means, from this mahatattvam, you take a small part of that karma, which you carry like a wallet with you, or a purse with you all the time. And in this wallet, or in this purse, it is linked to the mahatattvam through a subtle pipe, which you don't know how it works. We don't know, it is not a gross thing, it's a subtle thing, it exists. Krishna's creation and Krishna's way of doing things are very subtle. That cannot be easily explained. Only through Krishna's words and Krishna's instructions we can understand that. In the Bhagavatam we get to know from Vedavyasa Maharshi's realizations on this. So Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying there that when you carry this small purse with you, which is called a chittam, chittam is linked to mahatattva. So that much amount of karma vasanas has come from mahatattvam to you, to the chittam. And that chittam process is the one which is activating the body. Which is activating the body. So in that chittam, we have got various things. It is known as the internal organ. Internal organ. External organs will come to that later. But this is an internal organ. So this internal organ called a chittam, that chittam is functioning due to being continuously fed by the mahatattvam. Through the chittam. Chittam functions through that. Now, we have got, I have told, there is another entity called ahankaram. Ahankaram means false ego. What is this false ego? That also we have to know. So, originally there is, the living entity has got this chittam. But as much as one is developing in one's life, one is growing up in one's life. I don't know whether you have observed this. As a child, he will not identify with the body too much. Although he is in ignorance, he will not identify with the body. He will always speak in a general way. But as much as he is becoming conscious of that I and me, which comes a little later, it is the only thing that he speaks. It's only me and I. Aham mamedi. Janasya mohoyam aham mamedi. Rishabhadev says this in the Bhagavatam to explain this factor. That aham means I. Mamedi means mine, me and mine. This gets established in us. Where does this ahankaram, this is called ahankaram, where does this come from? This has come, developed automatically surrounding the jiva, living entity inside, from this chittam. Chittam has come out, this ahankaram, the false ego. And the moment this identity, I, builds up inside, then the problem also starts from there. Our problem starts from there. And that is where, and you can also notice one thing. A man, when he grows up, what does he say? I've done this, or I've done that. I'll go here, I'll go there. I've slept, I've eaten. Woman also says the same thing, isn't it? She doesn't say, because it's male and female difference doesn't come in the false ego. I don't know whether you have noticed that. False ego is the same for man and for the woman. Because this comes from the chittam. It is not in relationship with the body. That is why it has no male-female difference in it. It is the same ego, I. I exist in a man, I exist in a woman as well. So this I concept, or I, it comes from the chittam. And that, once that identity is established like that, that ahankaram is difficult to come out of that. Now this ahankaram gives rise to so many other things in the body. These are all the subtle creation that is happening inside. From ahankaram, association with the modes of nature develops into three different roots. One is called satika ahankaram, second is called rajasa ahankaram, and the third one is called tamasa ahankaram. In other words, ahankaram, false ego in the mood of goodness, false ego in the mood of passion, and false ego in the mood of ignorance. Isn't it? Three things. Goodness, passion, ignorance, and those three things, ahankaram, false ego associate with that, and these three things are built up from that. As soon as these three things comes up, from satya ahankaram comes the mind. Mind comes from the satya ahankaram, from the mode of goodness, which is associated with the false ego. From the, and that, that, what does the mind do? Mind gives the ability to discriminate. For example, when the senses have come into contact with sense objects, the senses give some information to the mind. Mind starts discriminating within the mind. It starts comparing. Is it good or is it bad for me? And it gives the message to intelligence. Intelligence makes a decision. whatever the mind has thought in its own mind. Sometimes we say also, to my mind, we'll say like that, isn't it? What does it mean, to my mind mean? Means I have, you know, my own mind analyzed it and I come to conclusion that this is better. Intelligence looks at it and confirms that. That determination is coming from the intelligence. So the mind is coming from Satya Ahankaram. Then we have got Rajasa Ahankaram and Tamasa Ahankaram. The senses, they come from Rajasa Ahankaram. All the senses are coming from the Rajasa Ahankaram. And the material elements, all the five material elements, what are they? Earth, water, air, ether and fire. These material elements, they have got their what is known as subtle form, Sushma Amsham. Sushma Amsham they are called, subtle forms. They are called Shabdam, Sparsham, Rupam, Rasam, Gandham. They are also called as Tanmatra. Shabdam means sound, Sparsham means to touch, Rupa means form, Rasam means to taste, Gandham means to smell. So these five things, what is being created, comes from the Tamasa Ahankaram. This Ahankaram, false ego, which has been association with the three modes of nature, has taken three different positions, three different roles. And from these three manifested these different entities, mind, intelligence and false ego, and the material body also. So now what else? The in order that a body can function, Krishna has injected something else into us, what is known as pranan. Pranan is that living force which allows us to execute the work, to do the work. So two things, Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti. Ichha Shakti is the desire to do things, or the desire what is built up inside. Kriya Shakti is the ability to function in this world. So that comes from, Kriya Shakti also comes from pranan. Pranan has got the duty to do that. So can you close the door please? So in order to do that work, what is required is what is known as senses. So what Krishna has done is, he has created two elements for that. The senses of knowledge and senses of action. Five senses of knowledge and five senses of action he has given to us. Isn't it? Five senses of knowledge and five senses of action. Which you all know what they are. These senses of knowledge are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue and the sense of touch. So these five senses, they are known as the Jnanendriyam, or the senses of knowledge. So these through five senses we acquire the knowledge. Everything in this world is limited to this. There is nothing outside this scope. So these five senses, what I explained, Shabdams, the five senses of knowledge, along with along with the senses and the sense objects, they are constantly monitoring everything in this world and feeding to your mind continuously. You see, it's continuously feeding your mind from this creation. Everything from morning waking up right up to going to bed in the night, all what is happening is these five senses are functioning and they are continuously feeding you with a lot of information. It's continuously fed. And that is one side it is going on. Apart from that, Krishna has also given us another thing for action, to execute the work. What the knowledge has come in, now in order to work, he has created five senses of action. They are called vak. Vak means the in order to exchange our ideas each other, we need the ability to speak. So in order to speak, there is a sense in the called in the tongue. So the tongue has got two functions. Its two senses are situated on the same tongue. One to taste the food and the other one the ability to speak. Both these senses are present in the tongue. Then we have got hands to do the work. Legs to take you somewhere where you want to be present to continue to carry out the work. And then you have got two more in the same body, which is for the evacuation and the food you require for obtaining the energy to keep this body functioning. Part of that is removed from the body in the form of water and part is removed in the form of solid. So we have two parts for which to release this waste from the body. So the five senses of knowledge and five senses of action Krishna has provided in this body. Now is the most interesting part of this creation. So, what's happening is that the mind is present there, the senses are present there, intelligence is there, they are all put together and they all have their what is known as Adhishtadra Devata. Adhishtadra Devata means, in translation, is predominating deities. All these material elements, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, everything has got its own predominating deity. For example, who is the predominating deity of the mind? The moon is the predominating deity of the mind. Lord Brahma is the predominating deity of the intelligence. Lord Rudra, Shiva, is the predominating deity of the false ego, Ahankara. And then if you look all the senses, for example, the material elements like fire, there's Agni is the predominating deity. Vayu is the predominating deity of the air. And Varuna is the predominating deity of the water. Like this, there is predominating deities in everything. In everything what you see, all these elements what I've explained, they all have their predominating deities present. Predominating deities present in them. Now, what happens is that, for example, even if you take Indra is the predominating deity of the hands, Vishnu is the predominating deity of the legs. Likewise, Vedic philosophy is saying to us that your whole body is nothing but a collective effort of all these demigods together. They have all worked to create this body and to give it to us. Although all these different predominating deities worked together, and the material nature has also provided all the help what is required to bring it together. Material nature, in association with the different predominating deities, brings this material body together. But it was able to do function in this world only when the predominating deity of Chittam, who is known as Vasudeva, is Krishna's another expansion, activated the whole body. It is in the third canto, very beautifully explained in the Kabilam. If you read Bhagavatam, you will notice this, that only when Krishna entered into the body in the form of Sri Vasudeva form, into the Chittam, the whole thing started functioning. Whole body started functioning. Don't take it for granted that this body is just a gift by father and mother. No, it is not a complete misunderstanding it is. If you understand Bhagavatam and the Vedic literature, only then you can appreciate how much all the great demigods have contributed and given us this gift called material body. You can easily understand this. For example, if one of these predominating deities don't cooperate, that particular capacity is lost. For example, sometimes you see people who are born unable to speak. Why? If these so-called scientists are so great, why can't they make them speak? Why are they not able to do it? This is the question, isn't it? Sometimes one predominating deity in one of the senses or mind or anywhere has to pull out that power. You are finished. You cannot function anymore. You can't do anything after that. Then the whole life you have to take it. This is what I've got. I have to live with it. Isn't it? Sometimes, but the modern anatomy and physiology, do they know any of these things? What goes on in the body? Do they think any such volume after volume they are studying this every day and night, isn't it? But Vedic philosophy is different. Vedic philosophy is telling us, without this predominating deities, Adhishtadra Devadas, they are called, in all these different parts of our body, and the whole thing are working together as in one piece. We take it for granted all these things are happening in an automatic way. Oh, I did this, I did that, I can do this, I can do that. So many things, I is going on. But behind the scene, these predominating deities, every one of them are giving us that ability to control our body and control our life in this world. And all these things have come into effect only when Krishna entered into us through what is known as Chittam, Sri Vasudevan. that Vasudeva Kala, or the Krishna's small part and parcel entered in, then the whole thing started functioning.
So this is a way in the Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita, as well as in all the Vedic literature, talks about creation. Brahma told Sri Narada Maharshi that in this way one has to understand that at no point you are disconnected from Krishna. We have a very close and strong relationship with all the demigods, with Krishna, all the time. Only thing is, we are not aware of that. That is our problem. That's not their problem. They didn't do this. We have created this. In fact, if you study Bhagavad Gita, you will notice there that all these things, when we are talking from Bhagavadam, people get fed up. They think that, oh, this is all very boring, the whole subject matter. Many people don't find it very interesting, because for them, they want everything proof on the table. And then they will have to go and get the science journal or science magazines, whatever they want to look at it and get some understanding. But this information is not anywhere else. This is only in the Shastram you will find these things. So Krishna is saying there that this body, what has been given to us in this way, it is a very valuable thing. It is not something which you have to throw away whole life using, doing useless things and getting no profit from that. This body has been given to us because you are qualified for that. That's why you got it. This body was given because you are qualified for that. So, when the opportunity has been given, Krishna says to utilize it properly. If you use it, using this body, you can come out of this cycle of birth and death once for all. This is the last opportunity you got in this material body. And that is why in the ancient times, the great sages who knew this science very clearly in their mind, who had no doubts about it, they followed that path, and in that process they gave us so much valuable literature and valuable information about the science of self-realization or spiritual life. So, coming back to this subject again, when Sri Narada Maharshi told Brahma that all this subject is very interesting, but then why? What is the problem? Problem is this, that living entity is unable to pursue this process very seriously. It's become difficult because although theoretically all this sounds very logical and convincing, for an ordinary person, it has become very hard. Where do we go from here? Because this is knowledge, the process of knowledge. It's difficult for ordinary people to follow. And therefore, seeing our pitiable condition, Krishna decided that he has to do something else to make us come back to him in a different way. And for that process, Krishna accepted different incarnations. You see, why Krishna had to take all these different incarnations? Because of us only. We lot don't have that capacity to understand these things and accept it. And therefore, Krishna wanted to attract us to him in some way or the other. So for different incarnations have come. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam spoke about those incarnations in much more detail. Srimad Bhagavatam, although spoke about the process of knowledge, Srimad Bhagavatam also spoke about the process of getting back to Krishna through the different incarnations. Valsya Kurma Varahascha, Narasimhascha Vamana, Ramo Ramascha Ramascha, Krishna Kalki Janardana. So all the appearances in the Srimad Bhagavatam has happened only because of this, that we are not able to. Krishna is seeing our situation, that in spite of all this, this thing called material body is not able to link itself back to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, he took up all the different incarnations. Apart from that, in order that we have the benefit of making our life comfortable in this world, Krishna has done something else for us. What is that? If you read Bhagavad Gita, you will find Krishna is talking about this in the very beginning itself. What does he say? He says there, Devan bhaveda nena te deva bhavayanduva parasparam bhavayanda prema parama vapsyadaha. Krishna says there that I created the human society and I created the demigods. Let the human society, by their sacrifices, please the demigods. Let the demigods in return shower all the material prosperities to the human society. This arrangement also Krishna has set up for us. Parasparam bhavayanda prema parama vapsyadaha. let the human society and the demigods, let them cooperate together and live happily in this world. Krishna never said in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam that we need all these huge enterprises in this world to survive here. Krishna didn't make it so difficult. Krishna's point is this, that this human body, which is can be used for a vehicle for a higher purpose, if it is used properly, it's an opportunity not to come back and take another body again. And that you can come out of this once for all. But people who do not even understand that there is another life after death, so what can you say to them? For those who are stuck in this world thinking that this is the only life I have got, I have to use everything for my sense gratification, nothing else after death exists, everything is finished after death, why should I bother about it? I should use this time for them there is nothing much to discuss further. But those who see the logic in all these things, or who has the capacity to think and who has thought through these things, they can accept what Krishna says. Krishna says, I have given you this body for this purpose. Use that body, it's a good vehicle to get out of this situation. Labdho asu durlabhamidam bahu sambhavande manushyamartadam anityam api hadiraha turnam badeyade anumurtiyaval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says to Uddhava that labdho asu durlabhamidam bahu sambhavande, that this human body is not easily given in a second. It is given with a lot of consideration behind it. A lot of calculations have gone behind it, that to become qualified to get this human body. And after getting the human body, manushyam arthadam anityam abhihadiraha, that human body is such that it has got a value for it. Yeah? And it is temporary, but an intelligent person who knows how to use it properly, it is a boat for him to cross over. Turnam paden, one day it will drop off. One day somehow or the other is going to drop. And that is certain. Nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal, that if he is intelligent and he is able to control his senses and the mind, and he develops Krishna consciousness in me and Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, he has succeeded in the mission. Or in other words, he has utilized his body very nicely and he has succeeded in the mission. So knowledge is with Krishna. Nobody else has knowledge. Knowledge is coming from Krishna. And that knowledge is not achievable through any other process also. Through any other process it is possible to achieve this knowledge. So like this, Krishna has spoken about things in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. All the time we have to understand that what Krishna is speaking is absolute. It is absolute. It is not. That is why in the Bhagavatam, how does Bhagavatam begin? Bhagavatam begins with this statement, isn't it? Satyam param dhimahi. Why is satyam param dhimahi? Param satyam, that is what Krishna is. Param satyam means, there is a satyam is also different. In many instances you can see, satyam is understood in different way. For example, say in this world, a snake is catching a rat. Snake is fond of a food. It's its food, isn't it? So it catches the rat and eats it. Now, as far as snake is concerned, he doesn't want to kill the rat, but unfortunately, that is its food. It has to get it. The snake's food is this rat, or a frog for that matter. It has to get that food. But for the frog and the rat, snake is standing there in the form of death in front of it. Isn't it? In the form of death, it stands in front of it. So, for the rat or the frog is concerned, snake is nothing but the death personified in front of him, and also he is feeling that I am going to be killed now. The fear of death is overpowering him, and ultimately he is consumed by the snake. Can you blame any one of them in this? By nature's arrangement, it is such that the snake gets its food, it has to get its food, and it so happened that the frog or the rat is its food, it has to eat the rat. So as far as the truth for the snake is concerned, it has to fill its belly and stop the hunger. So that is the truth as far as the snake is concerned. Now as far as the frog or the rat is concerned, that is going to be eaten, that is the truth. You can't blame the snake for that. It's no point going and killing the snake, or you're eating the rat, why you are killing that? No, it is its food. By nature's arrangement, it is arranged like that. So all these things are relative things in this world. Everything in this world is a relative thing. So that relative truth is not what is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't discuss relative truths. Newspapers, televisions, all these things, they are discussing relative truths. That is where the difference is. Srimad Bhagavatam discusses absolute truth. Satyam Param Dhimahi. You see, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Only the absolute truth is discussed, because discussing relative truth doesn't get you anywhere. Because material nature is behind everything, who is controlling us from in a very powerful way, and you have no freedom to stay out of it. You are also a part of that controlled form of the nature. So as long as you are under control of material nature, you can only discuss this relative truth, and you are finished with that. And there you will find this is right, this is wrong, he is wrong, he is right. All these are coming from that. But when it comes to the absolute platform of Krishna consciousness, Satyam Param Dhimahi comes in there. Absolute truth is discussed. And only when one becomes attached to the absolute truth, he can come out of the relative truth. When one realizes the absolute truth, he is released from the relative truth. So long as one is not conscious of the absolute truth, he will continue to discuss day in and day out about the relative truths of this world. Somebody will say, oh, we have to do this to that country, has done this to our country has done this to that country. Hundreds of years ago they have fought, and these people are still keeping the enmity each other. Something has happened between two great grandfathers, they have fought each other. And the grandchildren are still fighting. Now grandfathers, they had enmity, we should continue that through our blood. So this is how this world is, all in the name of relative truth. So relative truth is not the topic that is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Satyam Param Dhimahi. So in all Krishna's activities, you will find there is a lot to think about. And sometimes it is very difficult to understand why Krishna performs certain things, unless you start probing into it very deeply. And Krishna's activities are beyond our ordinary people, find it difficult to understand. But the interesting thing about Krishna consciousness is that whatever Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna has made sure that he has practiced it in his life 100%, without any deviation from that. That you can see yourself. That I am not talking about the 10th canto. In the 10th canto, whatever Krishna has done was only for the purpose of what is known as Pravritti Lila. Pravritti Lila means Krishna has performed so many pastimes with one intention, in order to kill the demons and to protect the devotees. That was the 10th canto. But as soon as you move on to the 11th canto, you will find Pravritti Lila stops there, and what is known as Nivritti Lila begins from that. And it is in Nivritti Lila that you understand very subtle aspects of Krishna's pastimes in this world. You will notice there, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Ekadasha Skandam, in the 11th canto, when Krishna decided to leave this planet, how he acted. I don't know whether you have thought about this any time. I'm sure you have read this in the Bhagavatam, the different things what happened in Dwarka at that time. Initially everything was in turmoil, that Krishna decided to leave the world. And before leaving the world, Krishna decided to create a fight within the family. Isn't it? All the Yadavas in Dwarka, Krishna wanted them to fight each other. Now, when Krishna took that decision, many people could not understand. Even after reading Srimad Bhagavatam, they have asked this question again and again. Why did Krishna could have stopped that fight? Could he not? After all, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has done such wonderful pastimes in this world, why did he not stop the fight among the family members? Among the family members. This is a question. You see how Krishna's mind and Krishna's way of thinking is so different than ordinary living entities. If any one of us were in Krishna's position, we would have made sure first thing was, oh, my family should be okay. Rest everyone else can go to hell. It doesn't matter. This is us. This is the difference between Krishna and us. Krishna thinks, as when I mentioned this to you, why I am saying this is, that when Krishna spoke about Karma Yogam or Jnana Yogam or any other knowledge, when Krishna spoke in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, every single moment when Krishna acted, he acted on that platform on which he spoke to Uddhava or Arjuna. He has never moved away from that. When Yadavas were killed and fought each other, Many acharyas have thought about this. What is the reason behind it? Why was this created? They have brought out some very interesting conclusions on this. And when you analyze them, only then you appreciate what Krishna has done to this world. Only then you can appreciate this. Initially, when Krishna came to this world, at the time when Krishna appeared in this world, before appearance, Krishna invited all the demigods to come here. Isn't it? You know that invitation was there in the 10th canto. All the demigods were invited because Sri Narada Maharshi was told that Kamsa is getting out of control and something has to be done. So in Golokam, Krishna was discussing with Radharani about this and Krishna decided to come, told Radharani also you could come. And Krishna and Radharani decided to come. At the same time, Govardhana Hill came, Yamuna River came, and Vrindavan also got moved from the spiritual world to the material world, to the earthly planet. They all came here. Along with that, when the demigods came to know that Supreme Lord is coming down, some of them had the desire to come here. Krishna invited every one of them. Whoever wants to come, they can come now and associate with me. When he came as Ramachandra, there was a great prayer from the sages to associate with Ramachandra. Ramachandra said to them, in this time it won't be possible, when I come next time you can come. So great sages came. All the demigods who were got the invitation, they all came. Because this opportunity, they are also looking forward to associate with Krishna like this. Because demigods, because of higher mood of goodness and higher understanding of their knowledge of the Supreme Personality's position, Krishna's position, they also was getting an opportunity to associate. Krishna invited them to come. So they all come. As soon as Krishna's activities were over in this world, Krishna told them, decided that they should now go back. There is no need for them to stay here. I finished my business, they can now go back from this world. So therefore, that was one reason it is spoken that Krishna decided to send them back to their own respective positions. Their own respective positions. So the demigods had to go back. Number one. That's one reason. Secondly, why did Krishna create this fight within the family? Okay, if he wanted to send back the demigods like that, he could have sent them back in a different way rather than creating a fight like this, isn't it? It's normal. One should. You have not heard anywhere else that before he leaves, he creates a fight within the family and make everyone fight each other and then he leaves the world. What kind of leadership is this? You may think like that, isn't it? That if you read in the Bhagavatam, in the Ekadasha Skandam, you'll find that time Yadavas have become so powerful. Yadavas became very powerful because after all they are all partial expansions of the different demigods at that time. And Krishna is prompting them, get drunk now. As much as you want, you finish, get drunk and start fighting each other. So they all fought each other. They start fighting each other. And in that process, most of them got killed at the end. They had to live. What do we learn from this? This is the interesting thing. In this Bhagavatam, all these things are pointing out to us something. That if somebody is intelligent, he will see this like this. This is the way Acharyas have analyzed this. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who could have avoided all these things, he insisted that they should fight, kill and die and go from here. This was Krishna's desire. That is number one. What does it mean? It means, if this can happen to Krishna's family, that means even Krishna's family cannot stay in this world. That will make a person who is thoughtful to think that my so-called family also, to whom I am banging on, is one day going to leave me. That realization will come to him. It is called Nirvedam. Nirvedam means that strong vairagyam will develop inside. Most of us are thinking this so-called family will be around me forever. Although we may talk, one day we have to leave and this, that and the other. As long as we are together, let's have a good time. This is our understanding on this. So this temporary attachment, what we have built up in our ignorance, not realizing our true relationship with Krishna, but this false attachment to the family members and being dragged day and night in this process and wasting all our life
simply in this process is what Krishna does want us to understand. Krishna wants us to understand this. If my family can go from this world, no chance of your family going to stay here for any time. Let that be made very, very clear. An intelligent person will see this. If one reads Srimad Bhagavatam, he will notice this thing. Krishna is leaving this strong message to us that if you hang on to your so-called family life and thinking that this will be there to protect me at the time of death and simply getting attached to it and in that ignorance live the whole life, eventually the price what you have to pay for that is to accept another material body again, come back to this world. So, in order to break that strong attachment what we have created within ourselves, Krishna has performed this pastime to open up our eyes. That even Krishna's family could not live in this world. Material world is created like that. They have to go. They have to go. So, if this knowledge or this thought at least 1% comes to our mind, probably that may help to take Srimad Bhagavatam to open up and read once again. That is a possibility, I'm saying. It may happen. If that happens, it's all worthwhile doing all these things. Secondly, this is what is known as Nirvedam. There are three reasons attributed to Krishna's performing this particular pastime. Krishna didn't come here Krishna came here only for our benefit. That is Krishna's causeless mercy. He has come here to show us that what this life is worth living for. What is to be done in this life. In order to educate us, He has come here and He has performed these pastimes. Otherwise, to take all these Yadavas back, He doesn't require all these external activities. It was done in such a way that from that, let them learn some lessons from this. Third and the last and the most important thing is, before Krishna spoke Ekadasha Skandam to Uddhava, the whole Ekadasha Skandam, Uddhava's instructions to Uddhava, comes in one verse. What is that verse? Tuntu sarvam parityajya sneham sujana bandusho maya veshamano samyak samadrak vijaraswagam. This is that verse in the Bhagavatam. This one verse, if you expand it, that is the whole instructions to Uddhava. Krishna, when he was instructing Uddhava in the last minute, before Krishna's final departure from this world, Uddhava approached Krishna. And Krishna was instructing Uddhava like this, Tondu sarvam paritejya sneham sujana bandushu. My dear Uddhava, if you want to come back to the spiritual world, you have to settle your accounts here first. Otherwise you can't come. He wanted to make it very, very clear to Uddhava. That is why he said there, Tondu sarvam paritejya. Give up all this attachment in this world, especially to whom? Sneham sujana bandushu. To one's own swajanam, one's own people, the so-called my family members, relatives, this, that and the other. All this attachment I have built up life after life after life. Actually, in ignorance we are doing this. But for the moment, our internal eye is not opening. This is the problem. There is an eye inside. Once that eye opens, we will see these things. But at the moment that eye is closed, only the outside eye is open. When the outside eye is open, what do we think? In the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, you know this story. That the Jiva asked Srinarada Maharshi, why are you stopping me from going to my next body? In so many lifetimes I have so many fathers and so many mothers and so many wives and so many children. Which one of them should I go and serve now? He asked Narada Maharshi this question. Janduruvaja, it says there. So similarly, Krishna has decided that while talking to Uddhava, he said, Uddhava, if you want to come back to me, if you want to come back to me, Sneham Swajana Bandusho, that today you have this deep attachment with your so-called family, relatives, friends, this, that and the other. All this has to come to an end. This cannot go on. Two things don't go together. Maya Veshamana, your mind has to get attached to me. Maya Veshamana Samyak Samadrak Vijaraswagam. One has to come to that position where one realizes Krishna in every living entity. Today we are thinking that this is my family, my father, my mother, my wife, my children. Rest everything, doesn't matter what it goes, where it is happening, how can I do, this is mine. This me and mine is so deep rooted in us. Krishna is saying, unless that is cut straight away, it is not going to go further. This we can keep on reading, but nothing will happen. So in order to explain this fact to Uddhava, Krishna realized, if I go and protect all these Yadavas now, and say to Uddhava, Uddhava, you have to break all your connections with the family members. And on the other hand, Krishna goes and protects all his family members. What is Uddhava will ask, first question, Uddhava will ask Krishna, Krishna, it's all very nice, you are preaching to me, but what have you done first? You have done, what you have done is, you have gone and protect, made sure that your family members are okay. And you are telling me that I should break all these connections with the relatives and friends, this, that and the other? This is the first question from Uddhava. So, Krishna wanted to make sure that this question doesn't come from Uddhava at any point. He couldn't afford. So, therefore, in order to show this to Uddhava, that this this concept that Krishna is above this thing called family and attachment to family and these things don't come into Krishna's equation. So, Krishna by his own very act showed to Uddhava that as far as my family is concerned, so-called Yadavas and all, they have to go from here. They don't have to stay here. And for that, I've created this. I could have protected them if I wanted, but I didn't do it because the time has taken its own toll. That has taken its own toll. I don't have to interfere in that. This is how Krishna has always acted. And all the philosophy, what Krishna has spoken, liberation is not something that is kept somewhere else for us to go and claim it. It's not like that. Liberation is in this very life. We have to get to that position of breaking up this material consciousness and come to the spiritual consciousness. And that is what Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita are all doing, to elevate us from our ignorant understanding and false conceptions and elevate our consciousness to Krishna consciousness. And as soon as one makes this understanding, one comes to the point of seeing that Krishna is situated in every living entity. All these false relationships, what you have built, is only temporarily based on the bodily level. And when that ignorance goes away, and when we come to the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, then one can see that, one can see things in the proper perspective. Otherwise, all our knowledge also, even if one has heard many times, if one has not thought through these things properly and seeing Krishna's instructions and the value of those instructions and how Krishna has acted at different times while instructing Uddhava and Arjuna, only then you can see, you can appreciate that how perfect Krishna was in action as well as in the words. Whatever he has spoken, in action also Krishna has shown to the world that this is the what he spoke and what he did was always matching. It didn't different, it was not different at all. So now we will go into Bhagavad Gita. We'll start from that verse where we stopped last time. That was the chapter 8. We have 15 minutes. Attaining the Supreme. verse number 20. Parastasmatu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktal sanatana esha sarveshu bhudeshu nashyelsu navinashyadim. Translation. Yet there is another nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So here, parastasmatu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktal sanatana esha sarveshu bhudeshu nashyelsu na vinashyadi. Krishna is saying here that the in the earlier previous verses we talked about the devastation. And after this devastation and the different experiences, what we hear, all these things, devastation, everything, it is always a function of Maya. Maya is actually what is carrying out this activity. So this experience, what we receive in this wakeful conditions, and experience what we receive in our dream state, and experience what we have in our deep sleep, they are all nothing but is experience. It is an experience. But truly speaking, that experience exists only when you are in that particular situation. For example, in Jagrat or in the wakened state, you are experiencing something. So many things we experience in the Jagrat state. As soon as you go into the dream state, the senses that was experiencing different sense objects, they have come to a stop. Automatically they stop there, isn't it? The Jagrat state, what you have experienced, or in the wakened state, what you have experienced, is not the same thing what you are experiencing in the dream state. So, who is actually witnessing all these things? who is witnessing all these things. I am saying that in the vacant state I have experienced so many things. But I am saying I have experienced that. Isn't it? I say to somebody, oh, I went to, say, Manchester yesterday. I saw these things. And I come back and talk about it to somebody. So what does it mean? It means that in my vacant state, I have perceived so many things in this world. As soon as I went to sleep, I start dreaming. For me, Manchester is finished at that time. It doesn't exist anymore. Or that all that experiences what I had in the vacant state, that is being kept aside by somebody, somewhere. And at that point, me the person is experiencing something different which I am going through the dream state, isn't it? So the dream state, I am experiencing a completely new set of things based on some other vasanas, what was in my internal in my mind or in the or inside, which has manifested in that time in the dream state. Again, the person who is experiencing it's me. So me the person is not changing. In the dream state, I experienced. In the vacant state, I was experiencing. But the experiences are different, but I am not different. You can see how me the person is continue to exist all the time. Similarly, when you go to the deep sleep also, as soon as you sleep, go into deep sleep, what happens? The mind ceases its work, function. Mind doesn't work anymore. The senses are not functioning. Nothing is working. But as soon as you wake up, what do you say? You come up with the idea, I had a good sleep. So what is actually in us, what we call me? What is that I, what I am referring to? I is nothing but the knowledge that I am the witness of all the activities of the senses, mind, intelligence, everything. So, but it is me who that I am referring to is constantly experiencing these changes in the world in these three states of different states of existence. So Maya, in her own way, in these three different states also, gives us the different experiences. And as long as in relationship with Maya, we are engaged in these three states of existence, our knowledge is never complete. We are imperfect. We are simply engaged in the activities of the Maya. That's what Krishna is saying here. Parastasmastu bhavanyu vekto vektal sanadana yasa sarveshu bhudeshu nasyalsu navinashyadi. In the three states of existence, each one gets destroyed at the end of that particular state of existence, isn't it? After the vacant state, as soon as you move on to dream state, that's finished. That is left there. And from there, similarly you move on to the deep sleep, all the dreams are gone. And then you don't even completely remember what you are experiencing in the dream state, do you? You don't remember at all. Sometimes you have some vague remembrance of something in the dream. But you never had an elephant has come to kick you, or the tiger was chasing you, you are crying also. And you are going through all sorts of experience in the dream state. But as soon as you move on into the next state, into the deep sleep, or back into the vacant state, what happened? All that stays is a dream. All that stays is a dream. So this is how the influence of Maya is. The only person who knows these things, it is me, that I have gone through all these three different states. So if there is parastasmastu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktal sanadana esa sarveshu bhudeshu nasyatsu na vinashyadi. If there is one thing that does not get destroyed even after going through all these three things, and even when it goes further than that, that is my form, Krishna says. That's me. So anything in relationship with Krishna exists. That means we also exist. As spirit soul, we are part and parcel of Krishna. So we also exist on a permanent basis only in that situation. In all the other three states of existence, our existence is also very temporary. Parastasmastu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktal sanadana yasha sarveshu bhudeshu nasyalsu na vinashyadi. That me who is knowledge in consciousness does not get destroyed. That's what Krishna says. Avyaktokshamityu tastamahu paramam gadim yam prapyanna nivartante tadhama paramam mama. That shastras are talk about that transcendental position of me in different ways. Avyaktam, aksharam, so many things are spoken about that.
that yam prapana nivartande tadhama paramam mama. Once you have reached that state of consciousness, you don't come back into these three states again. That is what Krishna says. So, initially for a yogi, when he practices the yoga system, he initially gets a spark of that in his spiritual life. He gets initially a spark of experience of that transcendental world, of the transcendental existence. But he falls down from that back into material consciousness again. But by practice, that is why Krishna said in the beginning, Abhyasena dukaundeya vairagyena jagrihyade. Abhyasam, by constant practice and endeavor and cultivating vairagyam, renunciation from the material world, one can come to that position, that come to the position of the higher position where one can look down and see these three states of existence are under the influence of Maya. So Krishna is saying that avyaktokshanamityukta stamahu paramam jadim yam prapya na nivartande tadhama paramam mama. One who has come to that position, then he does not have to come back here again. That is Krishna's planet or the Vaikuntha world, whatever it is referred to. Purushasa parapartha bhaktyala bhyastunanyaya yasyandastani bhudani yena sarvamidam tadam. Krishna is saying here a very important point. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, Arjuna, if you want to come to that position, the easiest process is bhakti. If you follow the process of devotion, Krishna says that pure devotion, not ordinary devotion, pure devotion. Purushasa parapartha bhaktyala bhyastunanyaya yasyandastani bhudani yena sarvamidam tadam. What does you can reach that destination very easily, Krishna says, as long as you develop that devotion to me. That is Krishna's point. That unless one develops that devotion, one cannot get there. That what does devotion mean? Devotion means getting attached to Krishna. That is what devotion means. That everything for Krishna. And when one is increasing that attachment to Krishna, the attachment for material existence will continuously come down. It will start diminishing. It will start diminishing, and that is the way to measure this. That if my attachment for Krishna is increasing, my attachment to the material world should come down. It should minimize. Otherwise, it has no meaning. These two things won't go side by side. I'll increase my attachment to material world. I'll increase my attachment to Krishna also. That is not going to happen. That's what Krishna is saying there. That as much as material attachment is increasing, material existence will also increase. That is also a known thing. This material attachment, if one continuously increase it, because that is our normal nature, is to increase the material attachment. So if you increase that, material existence will also increase, then it will become very complicated to come out of it. That yatra gale tvanavartim avartim jaiva yogina prayadayantidam kalam vakshyami bharadarshabham. Now in the next verse, Krishna discusses some important points. Important point means Devayanam and Pitriyanam. This is what is discussed. Often you will find people talking about it, that Devayanam and Pitriyanam. Devayanam is the process through which the soul passes to the higher planets. Pitriyanam is the process which the soul leaves the earthly planet and goes into the Pitrilokam and come back to this world again. So Krishna has spoken about two processes in this. Devayanam and Pitriyanam. These are very important things to understand. What does Devayanam means and what Pitriyanam means? Generally, when the spirit soul leaves the body, according to the consciousness it has created, a particular route is already set forth for the living entity. Now, one thing you have to remember, in this particular sixth chapter, when Krishna is talking about Devayanam and Pitriyanam, it is only applies to yogis. It is not for devotees or jnanis. It only refers to the yogis. Please do not take this and start applying to anyone and everyone. That doesn't make any sense. Devayanam and Pitriyanam, what Krishna has spoken here, only applies to Ashtanga Yogis. Ashtanga Yogi means who has followed the process of Yamam, Niyamam, Asanam, Pranayamam, Pratyaharam, Dharana, Dhyanam, Samadhi. The eight kinds of yoga system, what normally the yogis practice. So this Ashtanga Yogam can elevate a person spiritually. And when he comes to this point, at the time of leaving the body, when the spirit soul break away from the body and it finds its route back to the next body or to the higher planets, that is when you apply this Devayanam and Pitrayanam. It doesn't apply to devotees or to the jnanis. They are not brought into the category of this. This only applies to the yogis. So what happens is, for a yogi, if he has succeeded in his Ashtanga Yoga process, what will happen is, at the time of death, when he leaves his body, the soul automatically goes through the Praetalokam, the immediate destination, where it doesn't stay anymore, and it starts moving upwards. Upwards means going to the higher planetary systems. Particularly, it starts going to the heavenly planets, or even higher than that, it goes to the Maharlokam, and Janalokam, Tapolokam, and eventually to the Satyalokam. Up to the Brahma's planet, he can reach there. All this Ashtanga Yoga, one who is practicing, is one is doing out of one's own individual determination and effort. He is practicing it, this yoga process. So if he has got the right teacher to teach Ashtanga Yoga, and if he has spent all his lifetime in practicing Ashtanga Yoga, the chances are that at the end he will get a good opportunity. If he has succeeded in his mission, the proof is that he will follow the process of Devayanam. Devayanam means the process, the path of the demigods, that Devayanam. So he'll get an opportunity to go through that, the higher planets, and from there, higher up and up, and he'll go up. He doesn't come back to the Karma Mandalam again. Karma Mandalam means, I mentioned this before, Bhulogam, Bivarlogam, Surlogam. This is the within which within which the soul is moving around, the Samsara Chakram, or the cycle of birth and death. We leave this body, we go up, come back again here. We go down, come back again here. Like this, we are constantly revolving within this karma chakram, or what is the wheel of karma. And we have not acted properly, so we couldn't get released from this cycle of birth and death. We are stuck here. Sometime up, sometime low. Sometime up, sometime low. This high and low position, constantly we have to accept, changing different bodies. When pious activities performed, we get a better body, in a better family, in good circumstances. When sinful activities performed, we go down. Sometimes we have to accept a lower body in the form of even up to the tree or a plant. Different bodies we have to accept. So the law of karma is such, so stringent, that if one does not free oneself in human life, one has lost an opportunity again. So Pitriyanam is that process. When one leaves this body, then his destination is not very good. In other words, it is not decided what his next body will be. So naturally, he has to go into the world of the Pitralokam, he has to go there. And in Pitralokam, the decision is taken that what the next body should be and where it should be. All these decisions are taken. That means he did not succeed in getting out of the Karma Mandalam, or the phase of the karmic cycle. He could not do that. So the result was, Devayanam does not apply to him anymore. He is in the influence of Pitriyanam. So through Pitriyanam, he has to go to the world of the Pitraks, Pitralokam. He has to go there. That's why it's called Pitriyanam. You are going to the Pitraloka, therefore it's called Pitriyanam. If you are going to the demigods world, that's called Devayanam. So Devayanam and Pitriyanam. Devayanam means going up, Pitriyanam means going down. So Pitriyanam is situated not far from the earthly planet. It's very close to the earthly planet. So in Pitralokam, when he gets there, the decision is taken now, where the next body should be, according to the consciousness, according to his activities, what he has performed here. Normally, when one has got a human body, the chances of going down is very little, unless he has acted so sinfully in this life. But majority of the people do obtain a human body once again. So at that point, Pitralokam, the decision is taken where he should accept his next body, in what circumstances, under what conditions. So many things are decided. And then from Pitralokam, he goes to the moon planet, where what is known as Panjigaranam happens there for the living entity. All the five senses, which were in the form of Tanmatras, it is pulled back again into the soul, comes back and he gets another, accepts another through the father, comes through the semen into the mother's womb, and accepts another material body, and the whole cycle starts once again from there. So this process is called Pitriyanam. Pitriyanam, as long as one is in Pitriyanam, one has not got out of the Karma Mandalam. He is still stuck in the karma. One who has got out of Karma Mandalam, he is in the process of Devayanam. That, of course, very, very few people are able to do that, especially from the yogis, unless one has practiced the Ashtanga Yoga so successfully. So, Krishna is saying here, Yatra Gale Tvanavartim Avartim Jaiva Yogina Prayadayandidam Kalam Vakshyami Bharadarshabham. That what leads one into Pidriyanam? What leads one to Pidriyanam? Even if you have practiced Ashtanga Yoga system, if one has not developed detachment to the material life and material world, on the other hand, for example, you see, sometimes people think that I am practicing yoga, isn't it? They're practicing yoga. They go to some yoga classes and they take some yoga lessons and they think that they are doing a good job, aren't they? They all think like that. At least they think like that. They are doing a good job. So, this yoga system is not what we are talking about here. This yoga in the Bhagavad Gita is talking about liberating oneself from material life. The other yoga system is how to become comfortable in material life. There's two different things. If one wants to become materially comfortable, you can see, sometimes it's so funny that some of the pop stars and some of them, they have absorbed in practicing yoga for a long time. They do yoga also. But while doing the yoga, yogic postures and all that, they are not thinking about liberation. They are thinking that a lot of money is coming in now in my present state. I would like to enjoy and I need the body for that. So in order to keep the body in top condition, top situation, they perform this yoga. So the goal is different there. In the Bhagavad Gita, this the Pidriyanam and Devayanam they are talking about, is that although the same yoga system is applied here, the goal is different, you see. So the goal decides everything. Your goal is, that is why in Vedic literature you will always find the goal is spoken every time, reminded to the person. Because if you don't talk about the goal, what will happen is, as soon as you find material life good, the goal will change very easily. Initially you will come to Krishna thinking that I will go to spiritual world. But as soon as millions of pounds comes, he decides that Krishna can wait for a minute. Let me continue with my life now. And the goal has changed. So the spiritual life you started in the beginning, right in the middle, the goal has changed. So like changing the goalpost, they say. So you change the goalpost. So the process also no use. What's the point in following the same process if the goal is different? So everywhere in the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna will repeatedly hammer this into our mind. Don't forget the goal. If you have lost the goal, you have lost the whole thing. Process, you may fall from that now and then. Doesn't matter. But if you fall from the goal, then you have lost everything. You see? So the goal is more important than the process itself. That is why constantly Krishna is reminding us, this is the goal, this is the goal. Whole of Upanishads, you will find this approach from the sages. Goal is discussed all the time. So here again, we have to remember this, that the yoga system what is discussed here is those who are looking for liberation, not for those who are looking for a comfortable material life in this world. For them there is no Devayanam, no Pidriyanam. The only yanam is enjoyment in this world. So where does the need to study Bhagavad Gita also is not necessary. Bhagavad Gita talks about getting out of the cycle of birth and death. This is to be very clear in our own mind. It's not to fulfill, and sometimes it's very often I do hear this sometimes from somebody mentioning to me. And I feel very sad that that's how they came to the conclusion. They say that if we hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning once, I can get through my day today. Is the purpose of listening to Bhagavatam is to just to get through one day? I don't think so. I don't think Vedavyasa Maharshi spent all this energy to write Srimad Bhagavatam just to get through the day. How miserable we are. How miserable we have become ourselves. Just imagine. Somebody else is a little more advanced. He says, if I can just get through this week, he says. Who is a little bit more advanced. These are all false illusory concepts in the mind. That I need only that much Bhagavatam to me. I don't want more than that. Just to get through this week. If I can get through this week, that's enough. That much Bhagavatam is enough. That approach won't help. Vedavyasa Maharshi did not write Srimad Bhagavatam just to get through the week.
or to get through the day. Nor did he write it. He wants to get through the whole cycle of birth and death. That is why he wrote Bhagavatam 4. So we shouldn't deliberately bring it down to our mundane way of thinking about it. To start speaking that, oh, if I can just get through the week, it's enough. That's all I need from that, nothing more. That's our mundane perception. Vedavyasa Maharshi's perception while writing Srimad Bhagavatam was not that. His perception was, this is to get out of this cycle of birth and death. If you want, you can take this advantage from Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how he mentioned Srimad Bhagavatam. So, here, Krishna has spoken in that way. This Devayanam and Pitriyanam we have to discuss. We'll do that next Sunday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.